Hello and welcome to Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. Today, our guest is Omar Hernandez. Hernandez grew up in Taos surrounded by music. His upbringing contributed to his desire to explore and experiment. A couple years ago, he was teaching Spanish to a young singer when they realized that their collaboration could go beyond the language. Over the past months, Hernandez worked on recording and producing songs with the talented Gabriela Salazar. They currently are working on a full album to be released during 2021. Later in the hour, we'll listen to a discussion between Jasmine Freedom and Kayla Morris about the movie Two of Us, and we'll close the show with some art news. But first, let's dive right into the conversation that Omar Hernandez and Elise Morillon had a couple weeks ago.
So I'm Omar Hernandez from here in Taos, New Mexico. My brothers, Javier and Ruben Hernandez, have a production company called Razor Sharp Productions. They do a lot of work here at the TCA. And, you know, we have a few branches that we do, like live streaming sports and stuff like that. And my interest has always been music. We actually all did music growing up in the school systems. We all played in the mariachi program. My brother Javier and me, we play trumpet, and my brother Ruben plays vihuela. And we grew up around the music industry with my father, as he did sound engineering for a lot of local New Mexico bands, Spanish music, Latin American Spanish music groups and bands throughout the state of New Mexico. And so we were always influenced and around music. I had started working with a young girl from here in Taos, Gabriela Salazar, and I was doing Spanish lessons because she was singing the Northern New Mexico music style, or New Mexico music and Tejano style of music. The Spanish lessons went into slowly working on her pronunciations for music and stuff like that. And before you knew it, her parents asked me to produce an album for her. And I had no knowledge of music production in the extent that I'm doing it now. I knew how to work certain softwares and, you know, the basics of stuff. So it really made me get into gear. And that was a big, fun experience. And at that point, well, you can't just produce an album and not have anything to go with it. So at that point, I approached my brother and I was like, hey, would you guys be willing to make me part of your parent company? Because, you know, you need the marketing, you need the graphic design, you need all that great stuff. If not, you're just going to have a product with no substance behind it. And that's kind of what happened. And that's where New Mex Records was born, was from a simple Spanish teacher tutoring type thing to being asked to produce an album. And then the rest was history.
When did that happen?
That happened, let me see, about a year ago, year and a half ago, really. We produced a music video for this young girl, and very talented. So I directed it and scripted it out and all that good stuff. And it was released under my sister company, New Mex Radio, which is an online radio station for New Mexico music, Spanish music, all that traditional Mexican, Latin American style music. And that was really the first project we did together. I don't know if you're familiar with Eric Clapton's Tears in Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I translated that to Spanish for this young lady, as her mom was like, this is a really sentimental song for us. And for the young lady, it was a special song as well, as they had lost some very loved family members in their life. So we translated that song. It came out beautifully in Spanish. And so that was like the first time we worked together on a musical project, but that was handled and produced by another person. But the first project that I handled and managed everything was for a song that she had previously released, and it was the music video. Yeah, that music video was really the catalyst for starting to produce her album.
When you started working with her, were you also working with your brothers? Was that like part of Razor Sharp, or was that
project? Yeah, we were doing, I was doing a lot, and I'm also a full-time preschool teacher, so I was spread very thinly trying to get all these projects done. But, you know, that's kind of what makes it even that much more exciting for me, is that, you know, I get to do everything that I have a passion for. Since I was little, I always knew I wanted to work with children, and you know, I'm getting to fulfill that. And the reasoning behind that, a little backstory on me for people that can't see me, is I only have one arm. So I was born this way. Since the moment I was born at 11 months old, I went to my first doctor's appointment at Shriners Hospital for Children in Los Angeles, California. And there, you know, I got fitted for my prosthetics and all that great stuff. And I always had the greatest doctors and the greatest occupational therapists. It was a lot of fun, and they really help you to learn and overcome a lot of obstacles that you have. And of course, I couldn't have done that without my family as well, because I was always encouraged to do everything and be as normal, I guess you could call it, as I could be. And so I always wanted to make an impact on young children. And that's where I want my future to head, is into the occupational therapy field, to help a lot of children, because I know it's hard. I was a patient ambassador for our hospital for a long time, and, you know, helping a lot of families, it was hard, because some of these kids would hide their arm behind their back or try to hide their legs under blankets because they're missing a leg. But they have prosthetics, and the reality is you got to make life your own. My saying was always, it's not a disability, it's an ability, because it makes you able to learn how to do things your own way. And it makes you have to think outside of the box. So don't call it a disability, let's call it an ability, because it's enabling you to learn how to do these things. And sometimes you'll be surprised, some of these people learn how to do things way better than people with two arms, two legs, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just a matter of determination and really not stop and believe in yourself. Like, keep believing in yourself, and you're going to achieve great things.
Thanks for sharing that. How is it teaching now? Are you teaching preschool?
So right now it's a little different. It's definitely changed with COVID, but I mean, it's not that much more different. The only difference is now that I have a pod, is what they're being called. So your pod contains 4 to 5 children, and you know, the face masks, the washing of hands, washing of everything, which is really not anything new to what we're used to. Mm-hmm. I work at a preschool here in town, in Taos, called Inspire, and you know, that was kind of, we already exceeded those standards as it was to begin with. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like, okay, let's implement it even to a higher degree, which was not that hard for us to do. And my great boss of mine, Taylor Etchmendi, acquired different locations throughout town to help as many families and children as possible, because it is hard for a lot of families to get back to work. Mm-hmm. Without having anyone to care for their children. And for children also, it's hard to do these online classes. It is very difficult, believe me. And then having kids that have the same grade level but at different schools, etc., that's also hard, because you have to jump through to each and every one of those students to help them and help them identify their particular trouble on X assignment, whatever.
During the day, you help the kids that are on Zoom following the classes, and you're around to support them.
Exactly.
Okay, wow. Yeah, that's big, because I feel like for grown-ups like us, it's so hard to meet people on Zoom and to not like actually be in person. So it feels like having a pod for these kids.
It gives them a sense of normality as well, because they're engaged there, but they know that once their class is over, they're going to be able to engage with the rest of their friends that are in the pod. It's not what they're used to, but at least they have that socialization.
Yeah, definitely. That makes sense. I'm curious of how you started playing music, being around music. You mentioned that your father was producing music, I think, or
he was a sound engineer, so right. For live events and stuff. And we always had instruments around the house. My dad didn't know how to really play anything. Mm-hmm. He was just kind of like always into music and always had instruments, but he couldn't play anything for you. And my brother played drums. So when I was little, I'd tape a drumstick to my arm, and in my other hand, I'd hold it normally. And I would throw around some drumming, I guess, if you would even consider it drumming. My dad always had an accordion, so I would mess around on the accordion. And then when I got into middle school, my brothers had already been in the mariachi program, so I joined it as well. And that's where I learned trumpet and some of the theory behind it. You know, music, I think it has to come from within as well. You have to have an interest for it. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can learn it and you can probably be the greatest musician in the world just by learning it. But if it doesn't stem from deep inside of you, I think you're gonna struggle a little bit more to get that feeling into your music. And I think that's one of the hardest parts about this was getting that feeling and playing the music, I guess in quotes, I can say playing the music. Because yeah, I was around it a lot and heard different styles and learned different styles, but trying to make it your own without sounding like someone else, I think that was the hardest part for me. And when I was learning, a big part of my time always went to going home and practicing. Because just the hour or 45 minutes you get in school is not enough to really understand your instrument, to understand you as the musician behind your instrument. And I think that's one of the biggest things. If you have homework for math and everything else, you should have homework for your
right.
music as well. But that has to come from within too, because if you just sit there and go through the motion and you're just going through the motion, you're not really trying to improve yourself. So I think that's a big thing is if you're going to go ahead and try music or put your children in music, make sure they like it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't force something on them that they are not really fond about, because right. then that kind of builds a little bit of a gross taste every time you have to go and, oh, mm-hmm. I have to practice.
Right. You're talking about going home and practicing music. Was there a time where like you got that vibe of that connection with the music you were practicing?
Yeah, and I say that, and it's kind of hypocritical because I didn't really feel that connection with it until my freshman year of high school, which was 3 years after I had initially started the mariachi program. Yes, I'd go home and practice, and I wanted to learn it, but my mentality was like, I just want to learn it. I want to be the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just doing it with the passion that I had for it, it was more of like a competition with my own self, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. But my freshman year of high school, I really kind of just took back control of myself, I guess, and just was like, I got to learn it, and I'm going to practice to learn, not practice to be the best or practice mm-hmm. to... It was just, I want to learn, because it's a learning process. You're not going to be the best, and you're not going to be the worst. You will continue to grow as it goes. And I think that's when it really happened, And it was kind of a competition thing with my brother, too, because he played trumpet. So I was kind of like, I got to be better than him. I got to be better than him, which in my defense, I think I was in my first year of playing trumpet. I think I was already close to being as good as him, if not better. But yeah, my freshman year, I think, was really when I took music for what it was and not as a competition or a game. And I think that goes for a lot of things in life.
That was Omar Hernandez talking with Alice Morion. Let's listen to a song he has adapted and recorded with Gabriela Salazar, a Spanish version of Tears in Heaven. We'll be back. Debo ser fuerte. Welcome back to TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. Today, Omar Hernandez, a Taos musician and producer, talks about his work and relationship with music. He tells us about the skills required for producing, but also about the feelings that music relies on. Let's listen to the conversation and explore music, specifically mariachi, with Hernandez.
How was it to play mariachi in high school?
You know what? It's a lot of fun. Sometimes it's a little funny and I guess odd when you first jump into it from a perspective of, like, you associate mariachi with traditional Mexican music. That's what it is. It originates in Mexico. But in such a diverse culture as Taos is, we have a lot of Anglo, we have Chicano, we have Mexican. We have a lot of different ethnicities in the groups. And sometimes it's a little funny to see some of these different groups in the mariachi group. So it was fun, but at the same time, it was a little different because you got to see the taste of the influences of each and every one's character, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't grow up listening to mariachi all the time, you won't portray it exactly the way it sounds. But if you grew up listening to classical, you might bring that classical vibe to your violin playing, guitarrón, vihuela, guitar, trumpet, etc. All of it together, always, to me, it always made its own unique mariachi sound, if that makes sense, because we were from different backgrounds. So everyone in the group was from a different background and different musical tastes, and it just came together really beautifully when we all performed as a group. When we graduated, I knew it was bittersweet for me because, yeah, we get sheet music, whatever, to learn a song. But at the end of the day, it's the taste that each of us bring to it. And when we would discuss it, sometimes without telling our instructors, we'd be like, hey, let's do this here.
Right.
Hey, let's try this. It had a lot of depth to it, I guess you could say, because of everyone's ideas. I think it's one of the best and funnest experiences for anyone is to take any musical or any arts class really in school, because you get to experience it with a lot of people that have different ideas, some that haven't been influenced or tainted by being coached by someone. And it's kind of the most raw form of being in the art, if that makes sense.
Right, it does. Yeah, that's awesome. And for those of us who are not that familiar with mariachi, can you just briefly tell us about the structure of the music, like what instruments? Because it sounds like a lot of people, at least in the high school band.
Yeah. Our groups sometimes consisted of 25, 30 individuals, which is big. But essentially, you have the violin. You have the armonía section, with armonía is the harmony section. So it's rhythm, the guitar, the guitarrón, and the vihuela. So the vihuela is like a smaller guitar with a rounded back end, and it only has 5 strings. That instrument is kind of a brighter, imagine like a ukulele, like that sound, a brighter sound than a guitar. And the guitar, of course, gives it the darker lower end to it. And the guitarrón is the bass. It's a 6-string bass instrument. And it's, I think it's one of the most beautiful bass sounding instruments out there, in my opinion. And you have the trumpets, and that's basically the essentials of any mariachi group. Originally, you did not have the armonía section, so traditionally that was played by a harp, and the harp would have the task of doing the bass and some of the melody rhythm of the vihuela and guitar. Then the guitar was introduced, and that kind of took some of the jobs away from the harp. So forth with the vihuela, and the horns were pretty much the last instrument to be added into what is like an official mariachi ensemble. And ensemble is not necessary, because a mariachi already is basically calling it a group. So you don't have to use mariachi group, just mariachi.
Okay.
That in itself names it all together, if that.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And so now... a lot of people do great things with mariachi. They'll add flutes, accordion, orchestras behind them, symphonies, and it just really adds a different color to it. And since they all already blend very well together, it just adds that much more character to the music itself.
You're talking about instruments being brought in into the music. Can you tell us about the history of mariachi? Because it's typical of Mexico, but it's also from Spanish influence, from what I understand.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So it's a traditional Mexican art format, I guess you could call it. Like you said, it originates from Spanish descent as well. They brought over guitars. As the mariachi music evolved, it really gained a lot of popularity. And the attire started changing. So the attire, what you see them in, it's called a charro suit. And the charro suit is traditionally a Spanish influenced suit. It is basically what bullfighters were, but it was a very formal formal dress. So before that, it was like white shirts, and they'd make bows with red and black pants. That really established mariachi as kind of being for the elite, I guess you could say. Because before that, it was kind of looked at as like, oh, hooligans playing music. Mm. But that change is what really made it more of a, oh, okay, it's for dignitaries. It's for the president. It's for guests of honor. It's for big celebrations.
Got you. Makes me curious, when you were talking earlier about the different styles of mariachi and like how people can like add an orchestra behind things like that, is there a specific kind of mariachi for New Mexico? Has something been like developed or can be identified as New Mexican mariachi?
I wouldn't say anything in particular, but in New Mexico, most mariachis that aren't commercially recorded, I guess, for the New Mexico genre are a traditional mariachi. But in some of the recordings of mariachi music in the New Mexico style genre, you hear a lot of saxophone. You hear saxophone and accordion. So I guess that can kind of define the mariachi in New Mexico, is the saxophone and the accordion.
I want to ask you about one part of mariachi music that I'm really curious about. It's the
grito.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I'll try to do one for you.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome.
Very traditional. And that, it's really, it's kind of like a mating call, I guess you could call it, but it's really to show the sentiment and the feeling behind certain songs. A lot of mariachi music is love related, like any other genre. So what the grito is like, really like, oh my God, I'm really hurting. Or sometimes it's the opposite. It's I'm really happy. So it's just kind of, it's kind of like when a wolf howls.
Pure expression of how you feel.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is that how you learn to do it? Just like go for it?
Exactly. You just go for it. Sometimes you don't even, you're not even trying to do it, and you're just listening to the music and it pulls it from within you. And yeah, when you least expect it, you're hitting gritos.
I was super curious about your production work. So you started with this young lady you were talking about.
Yes.
And you've recorded a full album for her?
We're currently working on it. We've released one song called Adicta a Ti. It's a cumbia, and that was really my first production, putting it together and getting all the stuff done for it. But we are close to finishing this album. We hope to have it by mid this year, if not later in the year. But yeah, we're trying to get it done. We have a lot of the music done so far. We just need to do vocals and some of the mixing and mastering and all that stuff. So it's a lot of work,
I bet.
But it's fun. It's worth it in the end. And we're trying to bring something new that is not New Mexican. It's not Tejano. It's not Latin Spanish music. It's called Regional Mexicana, I guess is the genre you would call it. It's not none of that. It's a mix of a lot of these genres together, trying to get a unique sound and you know, see what we like and what the people like as well. It's fun working and trying to come up with ideas for some of these songs. And when we're writing songs, it's definitely funny to see how little you really know about music, because it's like, oh my God, these are the worst lyrics anyone has ever written. But it's an experience that you learn with. And I've definitely learned a lot. Like I said, it wasn't something that I planned on doing. Like, oh my God, I want to produce music. It was right. Kind of like, oh, okay, I guess I'll try.
All right, I'll go for it.
Yeah, I hope I don't fail you, but I will definitely try my hardest.
Yeah. As you're learning to produce music, what does that mean? Like, I'm assuming there's the recording part, there's like the mixing and mastering, but distribution, the image, is that part of
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah. Being a producer nowadays, it's not easy. And I'm acting like I've been in the industry for a long time producing, but it really isn't. I mean, you could be a producer that just produces the music, the song, the album, whatever. Here you go, be on your way.
Right.
But I'm trying to be a record label, mm-hmm. which entails, like you said, being the producer, producing album, getting the musicians to come in and do their recordings, recording them, recording the vocals, coming up with the arrangements for songs, getting original songs, working with people in the advertisement industry, working with people in Texas, working with people in Mexico, working with people here in New Mexico, all over the country to get the best product that you possibly can. And that's just for the music production side.
Right.
And then you still have the mixing and mastering, which, mm-hmm. you know, also takes a lot of time, because you want to make sure you're going to release something that sounds good. And it's hard, because sometimes you're like, wow, this sounds amazing. And then you hear it in someone's car and you're like, wow, is that what I just...
Right.
Oh, okay, let's okay. go back to the editing. So that takes a lot of time and progress away from releasing music is that part, because you really want to try to give the best results. And you second guess yourself a lot, especially myself. Mm-hmm. I second guess myself a lot, because I'm like, okay, well... is it going to meet industry standards, et cetera, et cetera. But what I came to realize is that, you know, I haven't been doing this forever. So yes, there might be mistakes, there might be things and room for improvement. But until I get that 5, 10, 20, 30 years of experience under my belt, I'm not going to really understand it. So I've learned to kind of like take a backseat and not be as hard on myself as I was in the beginning, because mm-hmm. I noticed that I was making more mistakes mm-hmm. when I was being hard on myself. Then we go back into like videos. So like I said, I'm a label, so I'm trying to make the music, trying to make the image of the artist, trying to make the music videos. So getting them scripted, getting them directed, hiring the crew, which happens to be my brothers, but still,
still
you have to like, hey, look, this is what we're planning.
Right.
This is what we need. Photo shoots, mm-hmm. The marketing, the social media promotions. Yeah. I'm trying to get the whole spectrum of the music production industry. Sometimes music labels use 5, 6, 7 companies for that. I'm trying to achieve it just with myself, mm-hmm. and the help of my brothers and their expertise in the field and market. Because we really have the full control and we really can, you know, fight with each other and be like, dude, that is a horrible design. That's horrible. Like, come on, give me better.
Right.
Yeah. That editing is not good.
Yeah.
So that, yeah. And I think that's kind of the funnest part about it is the family aspect of it too, is, we're all really close.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're working on projects, we'll shoot ideas off of each other. Sometimes they'll mm-hmm. be like, hey, well, why don't you try doing this? Mm-hmm. Or why don't you try that? Or vice versa, me to them when they're editing a music video or whatever. So that's always fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was going to ask you if COVID had been an issue for the producing.
I think the hardest part has been not having live events or not mm-hmm. having as much events. That really is difficult because you can't stay on top of your game if you don't have a playing court to go and play
right.
it.
Yeah.
So I think we've made the best of it. We put on a New Year's Eve concert with the sister company, New Mex Radio. So it was a New Year's Eve bring in 2021
okay.
virtual concert. So we filmed it and it was a lot of networking and managing to get it done mm-hmm. right. Because of COVID. So
right.
In between sets, we'd have 2 hours or more for the different acts. So in between mm-hmm. acts,
yeah.
just to go and sterilize all the microphones, change out the windscreen so it's a fresh windscreen and it's all nice and clean, cleaning the mic stands that way if they touched it or whatever. So we got to really see what it took to do something
mm-hmm.
on a little bit of a bigger scale during these times, and it is not easy, I can tell you that.
And do you have any other events like that planned for the year?
We do not have anything planned so far, but make sure to stay posted to our social medias, Radio Sharp Productions or New Mex Records, and that's kind of where we post all of our upcoming events. And I think we're going to be locked down for a little bit longer. So I think it wouldn't be bad to do a few more of these type of events.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we can finally be live, we're going to be more than ready and more than excited and happy to be back on stage.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Omar.
Thank you so much.
I learned so much. I am so excited to share this.
I'm excited to be your first guest, and feel free to message me or inbox me and Omar Hernandez and New Mex Records. And thank you guys so much for listening to us ramble about music and give our opinions on the subject.
That was Omar Hernandez. You can reach him at New Mex Records and on Instagram or through Razor Sharp Productions. You can still check out the virtual concert he mentions, the New Mex Radio House Fiesta. It's available on Facebook and YouTube with over 30,000 views. Here's a song he recorded with the artist Gabriela Salazar, Adicta.
Cuando estás aquí, se acelera sin el control. Sí, es
Welcome back to TCA Radio Hour. Let's listen to Jasmine Freedom and Kayla Morris discussing the film Two of Us. Nina and Madeline, two retired women, have secretly been deeply in love for decades. From everybody else's point of view, including Madeline's family, they are simply neighbors on the top floor of their apartment building. They come and go between their two apartments, sharing the tender delights of life together, until the day the relationship is turned upside down by an unexpected event that leads Madeline's daughter to slowly unveil the truth about them.
Tu vivrai con me.
Grande, on pourrait commencer à chercher notre nouveau chez nous.
So we watched Two of Us. My name is Kayla Morris.
I'm Jasmine Freedom.
I want to know which character you related to most.
Oh, no, that's also on my question list. All right, we're down to 8 questions. So there's 2 main characters in the movie. One of them, it has like a little bit of a, I would say, like more outgoing or like stronger personality. And the other one's like a little bit more passive. I would say I related to the woman who was having a hard time telling her kids the truth about what was going on. It was frustrating for me to watch, but I felt like I've been in situations where I didn't handle things as I would have wanted to. And I saw where she was coming from.
I think overall I related more to Nina, which was the other main character. I liked her outward presentation and personality. I liked the way she carried herself. So maybe I like to see myself in that kind of character. Maybe that's just me projecting a hopefulness, because I thought she was kind of cool and like authentic, and she just wanted to live her life how she wanted to live it.
How did you feel about the chemistry that they had together, them being two pretty different personalities?
I liked it. What I got caught up in was the opposites attract thing, because it's like, in what case do opposites attract? Physicality or like personality or, you know, whatever. But in their case, I think there was obvious differences between them, but I think what brought them together was, you know, they had this long relationship. And so I think they really got to know each other over time. So I sensed like a really good comfort between the characters. Yeah, I thought that their chemistry was believable. I felt it for sure. And it was nice to see that kind of chemistry represented from women in their age group.
Yeah. A lot of mainstream Hollywood movies just have that tendency to, like, you know, only portray love between young, conventionally attractive people. And it's nice to see it, like, anybody can be in love at any time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I loved that. And I thought it seemed like a real relationship. You know, they shared the excitement of their future. And, you know, I was hopeful for them. So that was hard to watch too, I think, was seeing their chemistry and rooting for them. And then seeing, you know, how the movie changed and how things weren't going to quite work out how they wanted them to. The daughter character, do you think she was well-meaning or more controlling?
Yeah, I had a kind of a hard time making up my mind about it. Maybe this is optimistic, but I thought that maybe she was well-meaning. It seemed like she was kind of constricting her mom by like pouring so much emotion into this narrative that wasn't necessarily reflective of what was happening for her mother. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like a pretty common family dynamic, as, you know, we're not always open to the idea that our loved ones might not be experiencing what we think they are or how we think they are.
I feel that too. I had a hard time reading her, but I think overall she might have felt burdened, so it might have been a control thing, because I feel like if there's someone who loves one of your loved ones and they're offering to help and care or whatever, figure that out and say like, oh, okay, well, you must be close. Then why would you be wanting to give your time to this person who's sick? And, you know, getting to know them.
Yeah, I felt the same way, that I was like waiting for a moment when she was going to realize and know that they were close and just be like open to it. I didn't know if it was about the dishonesty or some like closed-mindedness or homophobia, or I don't know, like being in a difficult family situation and being a little bit like, oh, well, who's this person? You know, I feel like there were a lot of scenes in the movie where I couldn't quite tell if it was one of those things or a mix or...
I feel like we had a similar experience watching the movie where we were like, ugh, what is this? I'm trying to figure this out. And part of me was wondering, because it was a French film, if there were some kind of like social cues I might be missing or things that they were saying with their faces and bodies that I wasn't picking up because I might not be akin to their type, like that type of communication or whatever. I feel like I thoroughly understood and enjoyed the movie. But in terms of like social cues, emotional cues like that, I was wondering if there were any kind of barriers I wasn't quite grasping.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. How much the like language barrier or cultural differences in communication affect the way that you watch a movie. I have one question that I really want to make sure I get to before we finish this. Did you spend 75% of that movie trying to figure out what that oldies song was in English? Because I like they played it three times and the whole time I was like I was humming it in my head and being like, what are the words that I know that go to this tune in English? Like I did figure it out.
Yes, it's I love it. Do you want to say it?
No, go ahead.
Oh, that it's the Dr. Dre Guilty Conscious song?
Oh, no. Actually, I was going to say
it's
that.
It's the melody. That's the melody that stuck with me.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I think I know like the oldies. That's that beat is from. I think it's called I Will Follow Him. The version I know is the Skeeter Davis one. My mom listened to like a ton of oldies, so sometimes like my oldies knowledge is...
As soon as you said that, I heard that song. I can hear the melody.
My husband was kind of in and out of watching the movie with me. And when I finished it, I was like, you might not know this song. And he was like, that song is in Sister Act. Everyone knows that song. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I guess I don't have special knowledge about oldies.
Yeah, I love that song. I watch movies with subtitles all the time anyway. I mean, like 24/7, I have subtitles or closed captions on. I always have because I like to really understand what I'm hearing.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't like to miss anything. And I come from a family of people who like to talk through movies, myself included. So I actually saw the lyrics to the song and it's in my searches because I'm looking for that because I would love to see that on vinyl or have that on vinyl because I'm like, that's such a good, it's uplifting but haunting. So I like that. Okay, I want to know if, you know, in that movie they were so excited about an upcoming trip and their new life and the new place and all those fun details. And I was wondering if that movie inspired any wanderlust in you.
Yeah, I would say there were a few moments where that was the case, not necessarily because of their conversation around travel, but just shots of like, especially, you know, like a tree-lined street where the trees are like arcing towards each other. You know, that's something I feel like that's definitely doesn't look like what we're used to seeing living here. Also, this is like maybe just like a weird, like idiosyncratic thing, but I get curious about interiors in different locations as much as I am about exteriors. So a lot of the like shots of their apartments were making me wonder about different kind of buildings and different places. And
I like that. I wasn't thinking that way. I was like, oh, yeah, I want to go to Rome. I want to go on a trip with my loved ones and just, you know, forget about everything that's holding me back. Yeah, I loved the film. I loved all the different pieces of it. I loved the characters. I would rewatch it. I would recommend it to my mom, my friends. I feel like it's an important love story. I will say as, you know, as a lesbian, it's always so exciting when you see some kind of queer love story. I can't wait until we have one that has a happy ending. I think it was really cool to see older in life queer women and their relationship and it not be a thing. Like, I mean, it was a thing, but it wasn't like, oh, we're old women and we have to navigate, you know, being gay or whatever. It's like they just were and they were navigating the other parts of it. And so that was really cool to see. It's just, it's always nice to see representation, and I think that movie did a great job of representing difficult relationships across the board with family, with loved ones, when you can't communicate with people you love for whatever reason.
Yeah, I totally agree with that summary of it and felt pretty similarly. I was surprised by how much of the movie was about communication and like care of our loved ones when wishes haven't been communicated and I don't know, ways that we try to communicate once that communication has been maybe limited by a situation or circumstance. I thought that it was interesting to me how central that was to the movie too. So that was another thing that I enjoyed about it. But yeah, definitely love everything you said about it and totally agree.
Cool. I'm glad we both enjoyed it. It was a good one. I'd watch it again for sure.
That was Jasmine Freedom and Kayla Morris discussing the film Two of Us. Two of Us is France's official submission to this year's Oscar race and is available to view through TCA Big Screen at home. If you've already seen the movie and want to let us know what you think, call us at TCA's Movie Review Hotline, 575-737-8009, and leave us a message. And hey, if you want to join us in reviewing movies on the radio, reach out. We're always looking for film lovers. Send a note to info@tcatouse.org. Okay, to close up the hour, here's some art news from the world with Alice Morion.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA, then everybody be surfing.
The music publishing business can be a challenging aspect of a musician's life. Record labels are often a great help to get music careers started because they have the resources to push the music of an unknown artist to reach a wider audience. They can be a powerful ally, but also a difficult partner when disagreements occur. Music rights pretty much mean music ownership. Whoever owns the rights will manage the use of the songs. For example, think of movies. In most cases, a music label issues permissions for use of a song, not the artist who recorded the song. Profits made from the management of music go to both the label and the artist. On average, 15% of profits go to musicians.
Nice to meet you, where you been? I could show you incredible things. Magic, madness, heaven, sin. Saw you there and I thought, oh my God, look at that face. You look like my next mistake. Love's a game, wanna play. Taylor
Swift, the American singer-songwriter who started out as a country singer, now one of the world's biggest pop stars, signed her first contract to record 6 albums with the label Big Machine Records when she was 15 years old. Years later, she tried to buy the rights of these first 6 albums without success. In June 2019, her first record company, Big Machine, was bought by Scooter Braun, who has managed other international stars such as Kanye West and Justin Bieber. Swift was against the sale but was legally tied. The label owned her master records, and so she has no say in who got to decide how the music was used. Although she wasn't able to regain her former tracks, she started re-recording her songs, and on April 9th, we'll see the release of Taylor's version of her 2008 album, Fearless. Controversy was sparked in February when the Grammy Awards announced that the re-recorded albums would be eligible for awards. Some voices in the music industry have asked Swift to leave room for other musicians. What do you think? Should there be another round of acclaim for Taylor Swift's old albums? Let's consider it while listening to her new recording of Love Story, Taylor's version. While Taylor Swift has been working on regaining rights to her music, The Beach Boys members and estate holders have decided to sell their rights to Icon Artist Company, a company managed by Arvind Azoff. Icon will manage not only the music, but also, and mainly, the image side of the band. Although the Beach Boys are famous around the globe, their image hasn't yielded a brand. Or not yet, anyway. With the announcement made on February 18th that the Beach Boys would be selling their catalog and assets, it's a new brand that is being born. It is rather unusual for a famous band to sell their rights at this point in their career, but the income and image shift that will follow might be huge. Keep an eye out for the new Good Vibration shirts and a Wouldn't It Be Nice restaurant around the corner. I'm Alice with your art news. Have a great day.
Thank you, Alice. This brings us to the end of the hour. Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been Tau Center for the Arts Radio Hour, brought to you with generous support from this station, KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truetausradio.com, and our local business partner, Lamberts of Taos. We'll leave you with one last tune recorded by Omar Hernandez. Here's Bandido. Have a great day.
Atrapa.